On the fucking internet. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. 2017. And it's another day in Chicago. I hope it's nice where you are, wherever you are in the world. It's gloomy. It's not as cold, but it's gloomy. It's dark. It's gray. It's just these days like this make you just want to just lay back and do nothing. Sleep or whatever, if you're not at work or at school. Or if you're just getting off, you know, whatever. And it's been pretty miserable just by, you know, no sunshine, rain, gloomy, cloudy, gray, foggy, you name it. We have that here in Chicago. But, I keep trying to tell myself, well, there's going to be better days. It's going to be sunshine and warmth, and spring will finally show itself. But anyway, it's glad to be here, folks. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad everybody is here. 347-857-1762, the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTTY, one of the finest radio shows, if not the finest radio shows out of the city of Chicago. At least something positive is coming out of the city of Chicago, something positive, and that's my show. I mean, you got people saying, well, oh, everybody should get out of Chicago. Get out now, you're going to die. They're killing people. Yeah, leave now, you know. And some people are, but you know, you got some positive stuff coming out of Chicago. You got my show. Yeah, my show. So I'm still alive. Nobody has shot me in the head yet, but you've got to be positive about these things. And Chicago is a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town. No matter what you hear on the news, and I hear it just like you hear it, and a lot of it's not false. Especially when you are living in a city where it's happening, especially when you have tried to do your best to solve some of the carnage that's going on in the city of Chicago, but it's keep going up and up and up and up. So you have to, you know, search yourself and try again and try something else. Try another plan, another strategy. Even the Pope, I'm hearing that the Pope is getting involved in Chicago's shooting, killing fields. The Pope. And we have the Archdiocese of Chicago also is giving their voices and their time and their efforts and their financial ability to try to help stem the rise of these senseless shootings around this beautiful, beautiful city that's being caused by thugs, murderers, and crooks who have no place in our society. You know, so that's wonderful to hear the Pope is involved. You know, this has to make the people like the mayor, the police superintendent, and the governor feel like nothing. I mean, because there are nothing. They're not the ones that's solving it. They're not even trying to solve this stuff in the city of Chicago. I've said this before. If we had better leaders, leaders who cared about what went on in this city, this would not be happening. And I'm even talking about leaders on a national scale. I think when Barack Obama was president, I do think that if he was a kind of an on hands president, we could have curtailed some of this violence in the city of Chicago. He was not an on hand presence when it came to Chicago violence, and his family. So often called Chicago their home. But after the White House, they never came back. They didn't come back to Chicago. I knew they wouldn't come back. They're giving an excuse. Well, we got to wait till our daughter graduates from school. Give me a break. You couldn't transfer. But he never came back. He never came back to live in the city of Chicago. And I know why. The crime and the political climate. I mean, why would he want to come back to a place that's going to try to propel him back into politics, which I hope not. I really do. I hope this is the end for Obama in terms of politics. I hope he doesn't want to run again or want to do anything again, because he would not get my vote. I'm sorry to say he would not get my vote. You know, it's people out there, oh, Obama, Obama. Yeah, well, he will not get my vote. And because I don't think he's done anything positive for Chicago in his 8 years being president of the United States. He's done nothing positive. You know, he could have. He had so many chances and opportunities to make a dent in Chicago's violence, Chicago's crime, and people in poverty. None of that happened, folks. And now he's not a part of Chicago's family anymore. You know, I knew he wasn't coming back. You know, some people say, well, he's going to come back. That man is not coming back. New York is his home. He wants to stay closer to the rich people. He wants to stay closer to playing his golf. He don't want to get involved in politics. Donald Trump and his team, they're blaming Obama for every goddamn thing there is. A majority of a lot of the things Trump is saying, if not all, are lies. Obama will not come out and defend himself against these lies. He will not sue Donald Trump for falsely saying that Obama and his team wiretapped Trump Tower. That was a total lie. Obama just sits back and let this stuff happen, you know, because he feels that he's above it all, you know, and he's a coward. The man's a fucking coward. What can I say? Even the Republicans said the same thing. They said Obama is a coward. He's not coming out of his shell. He should. I think we do need him, but I don't want him unless he is out there for us. Who knows? If he comes out of his shell, he might be on Donald Trump's side. Remember, he said before he left office, he said, do not take Donald Trump. Do not underestimate Donald Trump. And I'm saying, what the hell are you talking about? There's no doubt about it. Barack Obama was not the president that African Americans thought they had elected in 2008. He was not that president. I know it's a lot of people out there that's going to disagree with me. Obama this, Obama that. Then I'm going to get a lot of people out there who are going to say, George, you ain't gone far enough on Obama. He was awful. And they may be right. They may be right. But I voted for Obama twice. And I was not about to vote for Obama three times. That was not going to happen. You know, because voting for Hillary meant that you were voting for an Obama third term. And a lot of people did not want that because Obama had disappointed them. He wasn't the Messiah that everybody thought he was going to wind up being, which he could have. He could have been. And I've heard people say, well, Obama will make a great ex-president, be a better ex-president than he was when he was actually the president of the United States. I kind of lingered on that a little bit, but now I'm seeing that he probably will not, you know. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, 347-857-1762. Author Danielle Linder is expected to be a part of the show today. We're going to have to wait for that. Anyway, I'm still nursing a cold. If you can hear that in my voice, or I'm skipping, I'm stuttering, or whatever, then you understand what could be causing it. All righty, author Danielle Linder. Okay, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back if we can do this. What we got here? I mean, I have all kinds of things popping up on my screen that's not supposed to be there. What is that, fellas? What is that?
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame, you know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted, in the case of Brown, well, where was he, in the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, Chicago White Sox fail to win their game opener. Also, I believe the Cubs ought to drop their home opener. Is this an omen for something to come? You know, but I mean, hey, well, this is the first game of the season, right? So give the guys a break. You know, they're a young team. They're still trying to feel their way around. So, you know, it's a young team, so we're going to have to leave it at that. They play tomorrow, and they got 161 more games to play. Hey, give them a break, right? But anyway, it would have been nice if they would have won their home openers. The White Sox, when they were playing their game today, it was hardly anybody in the seats. The damn, they changed the name of the park from Comiskey Park to Guaranteed Rate Field, which is a mouthful, and I think it's a horrible, horrible name, like so many other White Sox fans do. But anyway, they lost their home opener, and we just have to believe in them and give them another chance. Okay. All right, so the White Sox lost, Cubs lost, so they have 161 more games to play. So do not cry. Do not feel bad. Just fill the seats if you can. Give them, these guys are making a lot of money, so they need you to fill those seats in those stadiums, okay? Regardless of the name. Okay, prisoner escapes Illinois Department of Correction. Why is this always happening? Every time you look around, a prisoner is escaping jail. If they're not escaping, they're being mistakenly let out by officials who are supposed to know better. Mistakenly let out, and then they gotta put out a manhunt and a warrant to rearrest these guys after they have been let out. By mistake, by the corrections facility, which is crazy, which is stupid. A lot of people need to be fired. But this guy, he escapes Illinois Department of Corrections. They had him in custody, and he escapes. And these guys get away. It's got to be a black eye on the Chicago Police Department, the State Police Department, or the prison system whenever one of these guys escape custody. It's got to be a black guy, but these guys always find a way to explain it over and over again, spin it, you know. But the guy is gone. Obviously, he's African American. I think there's more African Americans in jail than anybody. Someone asked me a question, George. Do you think African Americans commit more crimes than any other nationality? Yes, I do. I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't say that. Look at the damn jails. Look at the people who go to jail. Look at the people who are convicted of gun crimes. Look at the people who are shooting down and people in their own communities and neighborhoods. Like African Americans. I'm not taking it away. Anything away from white America or Mexican Americans or any other nationality, but anybody with half of a brain knows that African American men, young men, teenagers, young men commit more crimes in the United States than anything. And they're committing crimes right now as I sit here and broadcast this show. They're doing everything, especially in the city of Chicago, as you probably have been hearing on the national news almost every night. And the politicians, as I've said before, the politicians pay lip service to everything that happens in Chicago. Even Donald Trump, he just played lip service. What is he federally providing to Chicago to help fight this epidemic? Nothing but lip service. He's listening, but he's got so much on his mind. He's got hurting children, hurting people, you know, building a wall. You got all of these things on his mind. But anyway, there's no doubt about it. African Americans commit more crimes in the United States than any other group of people. I think anybody out there listening at the sound of my voice would agree with that. It used to be hard for me to say that, but reality is just staring you right in the face. You know, it's there. And it's something when you go to visit a jail, any jail within the United States, And the majority of the inmates are Black, young Black men. And a lot of them should be there. They deserve to be locked up. You wouldn't want them back on the streets. But you wonder why they're incarcerated, locked up in jail. Are they getting the services and support that they need? So once they're released, they can live a life without crime. I don't think so. Because the majority of these African-Americans who are released out on bail or have served their sentence or they're getting out being paroled, wind up back in jail, wind up ending up, why was they let out in the first place? They're convicted of, you know, gun crimes, murder, and they go back. So, you know, the prison system is 80%, 85% African-Americans. It's a damn shame, though. And African-Americans are constantly going to jail. And this guy, as I just got through mentioning, he escaped. I don't think I'm going to, you know, mention his name or anything because to some of us, he's just another another African-American bad guy going to jail. No doubt and about it, he deserves to be there. But you think about it. Some of these guys, when they're locked up for 10, 15 years and they finally, you know, they finally see freedom for the first time in all those years, they come out acting as if serving a 10-year prison sentence is a badge of honor, as if it's something that they're going to put on their resume to, you know, elevate themselves to the next level of their criminality. It's wicked, it's whacked, it's screwed, but a few people think that once they've done 5, 10, 20 years in jail, that it's a badge of honor, especially when they're trying to get back into crime, you know. So, all right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We are going to do this. We will be right back. Suspected Syria gas attack kills dozens, draws world condemnation. Haunting images of lifeless children piled in heaps reflect the magnitude of the attack, which was reminiscent of a 2013 chemical assault that left hundreds dead. Wow. This is in Syria, gas attack kills dozens of people, women, children. Wow. This is just stunning what a dangerous world we live in, and how talking about peace and making the world a better place is laughable to some. And especially when you've got children dying in a gas attack, This is just horrific. I mean, every world leader should condemn this, and there should be something done, because this might have been perpetrated by the government. Who knows? That there should be an investigation. This should not just go as is. This needs to be investigated. Find out what the hell happened. You know, who is responsible? A suspected government chemical attack in an opposition-held town in northern Syria killed dozens of people on Tuesday, leaving residents gasping for breath and convulsing in the streets and overcrowded hospitals. If confirmed, folks, it would be the deadliest chemical attack in 4 years. This is something. All of this violence in the world, and the George Wilder Jr. Show wants to make the world a better place. Well, we're going to keep trying, folks. A nonprofit coalition of groups treating victims of the war in Syria told NBC News that at least 83 people died, including children, and at least 350 others were injured in the incident in northern Providence of Syria. Southwest of Aleppo, in this early morning attack, which witnesses said was carried out by Saduka jets operated by Russian and Syrian governments. Wow, this was so the gas attack was caused by airplanes spraying that shit down up on people while they were doing whatever they were doing. And this is murder. That's what this is. This is total murder. That this was a senseless killing, murder. That's all this was. That's it, folks. And like I said before, somebody should pay the price for this. I'm pretty sure some people are saying it was Russia. Some saying it was Syrian governments. I was saying that even before I read this article, that it was probably government who murdered these people. It could be. This could be testing the strength or stupidity of our president, Donald Trump. But there is no doubt about it. Half the people in the world, if not three quarters of the people in the world, think that America is a joke. They think we have a joke of a president. Americans think we have a joke of a president. And a lot of these leaders from other countries, they are testing this guy. They know he's a hothead. They know he's an idiot. They know he doesn't know anything about anything. He has people around him who are feeding him, teaching him, and showing him how this government operates. Donald Trump knows nothing about the law. He probably hasn't read anything about the law. He's probably trying to catch up now because he's president. It'll help him in his job, you know, knowledge. But this latest attack that they're saying that the Russians and the Syrian government probably took part in is horrible. A chemical attack sprayed from airplanes, like if you're dusting your crop field or something out in the on your farm or something or on your ranch. This was horrible, including at least 83 people died, including 25 children, and at least 350 others were injured in the incident in northern Syria. Wow. At least southwest of Aleppo. Okay. Aleppo is a city in Syria. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are going to do this. Let's see if we can do this. That's Chuck Schumer on Donald Trump.
At first, you both seem pretty cordial to each other.
Yep.
Fast forward a few weeks, he's calling you the head clown.
Yes.
You're chanting dump Trump at rallies. Clearly, you're not working together anymore. So what do you mean by dump Trump?
Well, we have to stop him when, look, here's what I believe. You should always be guided by your values. That's my internal gyroscope. The higher up you go in politics and in anything else in life, mm-hmm. the more fierce the winds blow. So if you have your own beliefs, your own values, and stick with them, you'll stay on course. Uh-huh. So when Trump calling me names doesn't affect me, Trump trying to flatter me, which he did, doesn't affect me. If he sticks with the right values, I won't oppose things just because the name Trump is on it. Mm-hmm. But when he's against our values and American values, I'll fight him tooth and nail. And that's my guide, right. Not what Trump says or doesn't say.
Right. Right. Senator, let's get to this other personality issue with him.
Him into one conspiracy theory of what he calls a silent coup going on by the intelligence community and former Obama administration officials. Here are the three chunks. One, leaks from the intelligence community calling out Trump administration officials for giving out inaccurate information about their contacts with the Russians and other stories. Two, news reports that the FBI is investigating possible contacts between Trump campaign advisors and Russians. And three, unconfirmed reports in the British press that the FBI may have sought FISA warrants to monitor Trump campaign communications. Now, those reports say nothing about President Obama being personally involved, nor do they say wiretapping was ever approved on Mr. Trump himself. Now, here's a rather amazing detail. It actually does not appear that any of these conservative outlets reported as fact what President Trump is now claiming, that, quote, Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Levin has asked the question as to whether the president is behind the leaks and the surveillance, but when he was directly asked by Fox News if former President Obama was directly involved in any of this, Levin said this.
I'm not Nostradamus here. I just think that we ought to find out. But I will tell you this. He's more involved than he says.
Now, it would be bad enough if the president valued the conjecture and accusations of these sources more than the facts that he has access to more than any other person in the world. But it's actually worse than that. President Trump took what Levin and others were saying and made it even less tethered to fact. With conjecture and venom, they alleged a conspiracy. He took it one step further and said it happened and President Obama was behind it. And as we've reported, the FBI director is incredulous at this charge and says it's completely false. Now, are there legitimate reasons to question why all these leaks and what are the motivations for them? Absolutely. But that's now a separate issue. This is about whether President Obama wiretapped President Trump. And the FBI director says it's false. Now, keep in mind, one not irrelevant detail here for anyone out there trying to make sense of this all. We've been here before. And this is not a land with much sense or respect for facts. This is a place of conspiracy theories, untethered to facts. And these theories are voiced by President Trump. It's Barack Obama faked his birth certificate because he was born in Africa. False. Thousands of New Jersey Muslims were on TV celebrating 9/11. False. Ted Cruz's father had something to do with Lee Harvey Oswald. False. Vaccines cause autism. False. There was something fishy about the deaths of Justice Scalia or Vince Foster. False. False. Inaugural crowd sizes, 3 to 5 million illegal votes. It goes on and on. None of it's true. And the people around President Trump who are enabling this nonsense, the ones who know better, you have to ask yourself this question. Are you really serving the president? Are you really serving the American people? President Trump's administration introduced his updated travel ban today after pausing to consult Congress and his own cabinet on the rewrite in hopes that the implementation of this new order would be smoother. CNN senior diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kaczynski is live for us at the State Department. And Michelle, the president once said that if a judge delayed implementing the ban, any deaths as a result of terrorism would be on the judge's hands. But that sense of urgency seems to have given way to a more deliberate process.
Yeah, I mean, administration officials, too, were asked that question many times today. We did finally get a response from the White House press secretary who said that the element of surprise against those who would want to do this country harm was eliminated after the rollout and then putting on hold of the first travel ban anyway. So it's not really something that they needed to deal with this time around. But keep in mind, this is still a travel ban based on national origin. It was rolled out as kind of a kinder, gentler travel ban, but there's still going to be those questions, serious questions that linger over whether this is even urgent or necessary.
The Trump administration's travel ban do-over. Today presented by the Attorney General, Department of Homeland Security, and Secretary of State.
To our allies and partners around the world, please understand this order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends.
The signing taking place in private, away from reporters. Only an official photo released. Quite the difference from the big ceremony for the first botched rollout in January in the Pentagon's Hall of Heroes. The new 90-day ban includes six Muslim-majority countries, not seven. Iraq is off the list. This after intense lobbying by the Iraqi government, the U.S.'s crucial partner against ISIS. The Trump administration says Iraq is working with the U.S. to implement new security measures. Though at this point, CNN sources say nothing has changed in procedure, just better communication of what measures are already in place. Among other tweaks to the original travel ban, it now spells out clearly that if you have a green card or visa, you can travel to the U.S. Officials can allow others in, too, on a case-by-case basis. For refugees, Syrians are no longer banned indefinitely. And the new order removes language that seemed to allow preferential treatment to Christians. The refugee program will still be on hold for 120 days, and the total number of refugees for this fiscal year is capped at 50,000 instead of the 110,000 the Obama administration had raised it to.
This executive order responsibly provides a needed pause. We can carefully review how we scrutinize people coming here from these countries of concern.
This time, though, the administration is making an attempt to back up the need for this order, saying 300 refugees admitted to the U.S. are currently under investigation by the FBI for potential terrorist activity. But officials refuse to say what countries those refugees are from, or even if any are from the six named. And a recent Homeland Security assessment showed that most foreign-born extremists in the U.S. were radicalized here and years after they arrived.
This new executive order suffers from the same problem as the previous one, which there is no real evidence that there's a security threat from people from these countries who have entered the U.S.
It is remarkable to go back after the first rollout of that initial travel ban and look what President Trump had said and tweeted. I mean, he said that he wanted to wait before that rushed rollout, but his advisors were telling him they couldn't even wait a week because all of these, quote, bad dudes would rush into America. And to your point, Jake, now the administration seems less concerned, far less concerned about that. This ban now doesn't go into effect for 10 days, and this is weeks after the initial ban was halted in the courts. Jake?
And also they had the interagency process. And they briefed members of Congress, et cetera. Michelle Kaczynski, thank you so much. President Trump's latest explosive charge is roiling Capitol Hill. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff of California joins me, and I'll talk more about it. He's the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, thanks for joining me as always. I want to get to the travel ban in a second, but first, about this explosive and evidence-free charge that President Trump has put forward. You're on the Intelligence Committee. Do you know of any wiretaps or surveillance of President Trump or of anyone around President Trump during the campaign?
I have no idea, Jake, what he's talking about. I can't go into the particulars of the investigation, but the whole idea that President Obama ordered him to be wiretapped illegally is just preposterous. There are only two possibilities here. One is that there was a FISA warrant against Trump and his associates, and Jim Clapper said that is just not true. It never happened. The other is that there was a criminal wiretap authorized by the Department of Justice. And if the reports are correct, Director Comey says that's not true. There are really only two people you need to ask to rebut this. One of them has already answered publicly, and the other is being reported to have answered privately. So I think this is complete nonsense. And, it just, again, further undermines the credibility of the President of the United States. And I think subjects us to ridicule around the world at a time when the idea of liberal democracy is already under attack.
But just to be clear, you know of no, I'll make it just specific to President Trump. You know of no wiretaps on President Trump?
No, I don't.
Okay. Today you tweeted this, quote, "We must accept possibility that POTUS does not know fact from fiction, right from wrong. The wild claims are not strategic. But worse, what do you mean? You actually think that there is something wrong with his capacity? He can't tell what's true and what's not true?
Well, I think we have to admit the possibility now that this is not just, you know, as, you know, scholars would say, you know, one of two possibilities in terms of an actual wiretap. I think neither of those possibilities is likely to be true. Then you have the idea that many have put forward that he's very cleverly, strategically trying to distract us. That's possible, but it's also possible that he can't tell the difference between a Breitbart story and reality. That's, I think, the most frightening prospect of all. But at this point, you have to ask, is it possible he really believes millions of people who came here undocumented voted in the election? Does he really believe that Obama wiretapped Trump Tower? If he does, then we have a much more serious problem than we have yet acknowledged. But I do think it's quite plain that from a constitutional perspective, in terms of what a president should and should not do, he doesn't know right from wrong.
In the text of the president's new travel ban, the White House claims that according to the Attorney General, the FBI is conducting counterterrorism investigations into 300 refugees, more than 300 refugees, currently in the United States. Is that true?
I don't know what the exact number would be, but a couple things leapt out at me about that section. The first is the only examples they gave, I think, were two Iraqis who must have been the two involved in the non-existent Bowling Green massacre, and one who came as a child. And is he suggesting that their extreme vetting is going to be able to tell when a child some years later becomes radicalized in the United States? The reality is, as Director Comey has testified in open session, there are counterterrorism investigations in every state. And I can tell you there are multiple investigations in every state. My understanding is most of those involve people born in the United States. There's a smaller subset that were born overseas and probably an even smaller subset who came as refugees. But if you're going to target where the risk comes from predominantly, you would have to say it's coming from people born here. And there's nothing in extreme vetting that protects us from that. And I think to the degree that the president is singling out one faith here, he's likely to exacerbate the chance that we have more radicalization in the U.S., not less.
Congressman Adam Schiff, thank you so much. Appreciate it, sir. North Korea launching four successful missiles in what NATO is calling a, quote, especially provocative move. This time, the missiles came dangerously close to land. Now, a U.S. official is warning a nuclear test by North Korea could be next. Stay with us.
CNN's coverage of the first 100 days is brought to you by America's Beverage.
All right, that was Jake Tapper of CNN. He's always interesting and exciting. He's always got something riveting to say about Donald Trump because Donald Trump can't stand Jake Tapper or the network that he works for, which is CNN. So he is part of the media that Donald Trump hates. So they're fighting back and forth, the media. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Folks, robots are coming to your town. They're going to take your job. Robots. I keep hearing this. I've covered robots on this show about a year and a half ago or whatever. But I got to revisit that issue because it's happening. It has started. Robots will start taking your job. You guys over there that are flipping burgers at Burger King, Wendy's, look out. You know, you're going to be unemployed. And, you know, a lot of the politicians and a lot of the corporations are saying that robots are going to help you to keep your job and create jobs. That's a total lie. They are out there to take your jobs away simply because robots in the workplace will be a lot detailed maybe or prompt or but this is the thing. Robots, they don't ask for raises. They don't take lunches. They don't need rest. They don't need time off. They don't need vacation days. You know, they don't give excuses for not coming into work. They don't get sick. This is why this is going on. And plus, they're in the long run, they're going to, and let me say it again, in the long run, they're going to save the employer lots and lots of money. Robots. This is scary, but it's happening right now. I could say, well, sometime in the future, robots are going to be taking over, you know, majority of everything in the United States. But I can no longer say that. I can say robots are, the future is now. The future is today. Robots are in the workplace. They're just waiting to get to yours. They are there. I mean, in any industry you can think of, a robot, you're a security guard. Believe me, a security guard. Your job is going to be obsolete. I mean, they're going to have all kind of cameras and robots. Instead of you standing on that corner guarding that door, there's going to be a robot there. And they're going to have all kind of sensors. I mean, you already got cars that drive themselves. They're robots in a way. That's a robot in a way, a car to drive themselves. You know, usually if cars are driving themselves out on the road, there's an accident, usually the self-driving car is not the culprit of that accident. It's the person who is driving the other car who actually crashed into the self-driving car. Robots are coming and they are real. I keep saying they're coming, but they're here. They're here in every industry. It doesn't matter where you work. If you can do something, whatever you can do, a robot can probably more likely do it better. Answer phones. If you work in an office and all you do is just sit at the desk and answer and transfer phone calls, say goodbye to your job. If you work in a bank and you're a teller, you know what your duties involve. Say goodbye. A robot can do it better. If you're a security guard sitting down at a desk trying to keep everybody safe inside that bank, your job is over. It may not, you may still have it, but, you know, brace yourself. Brace yourself. So it's not good for the American worker in some aspects when it comes to employment, working, your job. It's more important than ever to learn as much as you can. Learn more than one skill. Learn how to do two or three different things. So in case you get your job get taken over by a robot, you can go into another field. Hopefully that field that you're deciding on going into is not taken over by robots. Remember, robots they don't argue, they don't bitch, they don't have attitudes. They don't eat, they don't ask for lunch breaks, long lunch breaks, they're not late getting back for lunch. They don't need to put on lipstick, dresses, leggings. They don't need to worry about how they look. They don't ask for raises. They don't get tired. They're accurate. So it's coming. And anybody who has half of a brain would know that. Would know that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to do this because they are coming, and it is very important that everybody, if you're working out here, no matter what you're doing, there's a robot somewhere that could be and probably will be doing your job sometime in the near future.
Welcome to Ideas in Action, a television series about ideas and their consequences. I'm Jim Glassman. This week, it's not cowboys versus aliens, it's humans versus robots. With over 9% of Americans looking for work, the job market has never been more competitive. But these days, competition is increasingly coming from another source, highly intelligent robots. Can the American worker go toe-to-toe or wheel-to-wheel with a robot? What does the increasing use of artificial intelligence and robots mean for your job and the future of the American economy? Joining me to discuss this topic are Robin Hanson, Associate Professor of Economics at George Mason University and Research Associate at Oxford University's Future of Humanity Institute, and Martin Ford, founder of a Silicon Valley-based software development firm, QueryBot Systems, and author of the book, The Lights in the Tunnel: Automation, Accelerating Technology, and the Economy of the Future. The topic this week, humans and robots, complement or competition?
This is ideas in action.
Funding for Ideas in Action is provided by Investor's Business Daily. Every stock market cycle is led by America's never-ending stream of innovative new companies and inventions. Investor's Business Daily helps investors find these new leaders as they emerge. More information is available at investors.com.
Martin, you know that since the recession began nearly 4 years ago, spending on human beings by companies has gone up 2%, that's all. And of course, unemployment has increased. Well, spending on software, hardware, technology has gone up 26%. Are we already seeing automation having a major impact on employment?
I believe we are. And it's not something that's just happening instantly right now. It's been going on for some time. Over the past couple of decades, at least, what we've seen is that the wages for average workers have basically been stagnant, in spite of the fact that we've seen significant increases in productivity. And basically, all the fruits of innovation and of productivity are really going to business owners and to management at this point, and very little to labor. And I think automation has a lot to do with that. Economists that have looked at it have found that currently the job market is polarized. And what that means is that the mid-range jobs, which have traditionally been jobs that have been really solid middle-class jobs, and they tend to be routine jobs that require some education and training, but not an extreme amount. And these jobs have basically disappeared. They've been vaporized. And what we're left now is a polarized market with lots of low-end jobs, low-skill jobs with very low wages, and also high-end jobs that really require lots of education. But going forward, I think what we're going to see is that automation is going to take on more and more. So it's going to start to impact especially the higher-end jobs because its capability is constantly expanding. You know, we're seeing an acceleration in the technology and in the capability.
I want to get to the historical comparisons, but I'd like to ask Robin, first of all, I mean, aren't there benefits to automation?
Absolutely. We are rich today in large part because we've developed vast, capable machines that over the last few centuries have displaced many workers and allowed other workers to go on to more interesting, creative jobs.
Didn't people talk about this, you know, in the 19th century, that we're all going to get unemployed as a result of new machines? Or, I mean, agriculture is a good example, isn't it? You know, tractors,
yes,
combines, and yet we're richer than we ever have been.
The concern that machines will displace humans has been a concern for many centuries. It's been something people have envisioned for a very long time, and so far it hasn't been that much of a problem. It doesn't mean it always will be mild, but so far it's been a good thing.
So what makes this change different from, let's say, the automation of farming, where we produce a lot more food with a lot fewer people?
Well, first of all, Robin is correct. I mean, there's no doubt that advancing technology is really what has made us wealthy, and then historically that's been true. The difference between what's happening now and what happened with agriculture is that, you know, with agriculture, we were talking about a primarily mechanical technology that was specific to the agricultural sector. There's no doubt it eliminated millions of jobs. It was, in the short term, very disruptive. But those workers eventually found opportunities in other relatively labor-intensive sectors. They found jobs, especially in manufacturing, and later in services. And also the other thing that happened is that as food production automated, consumers had more money to spend, and they spent it on other things, in manufacturing and in services. And that did drive employment. But the key is that at that time, technology was at a point where those sectors were labor intensive. They had to hire a lot of workers. what we have today is quite different. We have this new field of information technology, and it is ubiquitous. It will be applied everywhere. There aren't going to be any sectors appear in the future, I don't think, that will get a pass on information technology. It's going to get applied right away to any new industries.
But Martin, I mean, just, you know, during the last presidential term, during George Bush's presidential term, you know, we had unemployment around 4%, 4.5%. That's almost full employment. Here, we've had a recession, unemployment's up to 9%, but really, is this just all of a sudden happened in the last few years?
I don't believe it's all of a sudden at all, but what I do believe is that we had a housing bubble, of course, and I think that masked this to a very significant extent, and it did that in two ways. Number one is that consumers took on a lot of debt, and remember, as I said before, wages were stagnant during this time, you know. Unemployment was low, but wages weren't increasing, and so people went out and continued to spend a lot, but they did that on the basis of debt, credit cards and home equity loans rather than on the basis of income, and that spending helped to drive the economy. The other thing is the housing bubble itself created an enormous number of jobs because it's building residential homes is very labor intensive. It creates a lot of jobs for construction workers, and it also creates peripheral jobs, loan agents and people like that.
So you think that was kind of an anomaly? But Robin, I just wanted to ask you, if this is imminent, this change, or if we're going through it right now, is there something that governments should do now to take this into account?
Well, let's talk about how much of a change we're having. You know, I think it's important, and I hope we agree, that there's a lot of short-term fluctuations going on in the economy that have little to do with increasing automation. Just a lot of other things going on. And it's a mistake to get too hyped up about this particular driver because it's a slow, long-term driver. It's not something that suddenly makes the economy go up or down. So I think we agree on that. So the issue is to look at long-term trends, long-term issues, and see where that's going over the long run. So if the government's going to do anything about it, it needs to be focusing on the long run.
But what about this argument that Martin makes? It sounds a pretty good one to me, is that we live in this era in which jobs where you make money basically off the sweat of your brow or the strength of your back, those jobs are disappearing. And even at a higher level, you're running into competition with robots and automation. So how are people going to
compete? For a long time that almost all the value for most work is from your head. Most of the value for most jobs is the fact that we have smart brains and we are clever about how to do the jobs. Yet automation hasn't equally taken on all jobs. There are some kind of jobs that are just a lot harder to automate, and those jobs are where people will go when the easy to automate jobs are being
And what are those jobs that are harder to automate?
If you are a software expert, you probably have a better sense for which kind of jobs are harder to automate. It's easier to talk about what's easy to automate, actually. It's easier to automate routine jobs, structured jobs, jobs for which you don't need to know that much. That's what people are doing all the time. Software professionals like Martin here are looking out in the world and trying to see where they can write software that will displace jobs.
Martin thinks, and I'll let him speak for himself in his book, he's really talking about a lot of jobs that are going to be automated, correct?
Right, and I think it's important to understand the point that I think most jobs in the economy are to some extent routine and fairly narrow. I mean, people get paid to do fairly specific things. I mean, you may be a very well-rounded human being, and there may be a lot of things that you can do that are well beyond the capability of any machine, but typically that's not what you get paid for. You get paid to go to work, and you tend to face the same types of challenges again and again within some relatively narrowly defined range. And as these technologies get better, they're going to be able to take on more and more of that. One of the really potentially disruptive things, I think, is going to be machine learning, which is a technology where software looks at what's been done in the past in terms of how a job was performed and then basically figures out how to do it in the future, basically writes its own program based on looking at that data. So as that continues, things that now appear to us to be non-routine will begin to...
So give me an example. I mean, I know maybe one example would be Watson, the IBM computer on Jeopardy, figured out how to beat the game. But in more practical terms.
In more practical terms, for instance, Google's got a translation tool that you can use to translate a web page. And you can get a readable translation of basically in any language almost instantly. And that was constructed entirely with machine learning. I mean, they didn't go out and hire a bunch of people who are fluent in all those different languages and then program that application. The machine did that by analyzing documents. So machine learning is a kind of, really it's a tool where a computer learns to program itself.
Okay, so actually, let's probe that for a little while. So you've got a machine that's learned how to translate. That puts translators out of business, but there may be some advantages, economic advantages to that, Robin. I mean, is that good or
first
bad?
First of all, these automated translations are a good first cut, but they're not a full translation. If you want something professionally translated, reliably translated, if you want like 99% of the words right, you need to hire a human today. So there's impressive technologies, there are impressive improvements, but it's really too easy to think that because they've done something really impressive that suddenly they're almost to where you are. Most of us do jobs and we feel routinized. We feel like we're robots because it seems so easy, but that's because we have such vast capacity. If you actually try to write a program that copies what most people do, you suddenly realize just how flexible they are. Most of these programs that do one specific thing, they can't do something very different. You take Watson and you give it a different game show and suddenly it can't do anything.
Well, that may be true today, but is that going to be true in the future?
Well, you know, I think there'll be a lot more flexibility in the future. But again, the point is that in their jobs, most people don't play two game shows. They play one game show. I mean, they specialize in one type of work. They do one basic thing. And actually, if you look at a technology like Watson, playing Jeopardy is extraordinarily broad. I mean, you know, you get questions from basically anywhere. If you take Watson and repurpose that technology to the real world, whether it's answering questions about medicine or providing customer support for a company or product support, I mean, it's a much narrower range. It actually is, in many ways, much, much easier than building a machine to play Jeopardy.
Would you feel more comfortable getting a consultation from, let's say, a cardiologist, a human cardiologist, or a machine cardiologist?
Well, I'm not at this point ready to cut doctors out of the loop. That's not the point. I think doctors are probably relatively safe, except for some specialties, perhaps like radiology, where it is really routine things like analyzing, you know, visual images. Those may be much more susceptible to automation. But there are a lot of other jobs in the economy, particularly in areas like customer service, customer support.
I don't think we need to speculate about this. We've seen many, many decades of steady progress in automation. We've seen what the rate looks like. We've seen that it's slow, methodical. It takes time to slowly chip away at the kind of jobs humans do and get machines to do that. We're not on any sort of sudden threshold where suddenly a vast flood's coming over the gates. We are slowly chipping away.
But Troy, you agree that the technology is accelerating, right? I mean, you're looking at an exponential, in terms of the hardware. The software is moving somewhat slower.
Economically,
but
it's
clearly,
not accelerating.
You know,
I agree that chips are accelerating. Every 2 years, they get twice as fast. But that doesn't have twice the economic impact. In terms of the ability to use computers to do useful things, that's slowly chipping away at a relatively linear, modest rate.
But don't you, Robin, don't you think that there is some effect of automation on the current unemployment situation? Or do you think that's completely
minor.
Separate?
It's not enough to be worth focusing on. If you're going to deal with unemployment today, you should be looking elsewhere.
And you think, Martin, that there is something very different about this kind of automation, artificial intelligence, learning machines, than what we saw, let's say, on the farm or even in the factory up till now?
Definitely much different than what happened in agriculture. You know, we've got a really revolutionary technology that's unprecedented. It's not different from what's been happening over the last 20 years. It's just more pronounced. You know,
why it's unprecedented. I'm not sure that our viewers really understand, let's say, what artificial intelligence is. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the machines are increasingly taking on cognitive tasks. I mean, they can solve intellectual problems. They can think in some sense. They can make decisions. They can solve problems. Now, when you say the words artificial intelligence, people tend to get caught up in what you see on movies, you know, science fiction type things. And that's what we'd call true or artificial general intelligence, where you have a true thinking machine. That's something that is still in the realm of science fiction. It's decades away. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is artificial intelligence that is specialized.
Give me an example of a job that artificial intelligence could supplant.
Well, there's an article in the New York Times not long ago about e-discovery software, which is software that looks at legal documents and determines which ones are relevant to a court case. Now, historically, that would have been done by paralegals and lawyers who would have been working with cardboard boxes full of paper documents. Now you have a software application which can go through electronic documents and figure out which ones are important for the court case, and that's you know, directly resulting in the loss of jobs.
Talk about the timescale of unprecedented. Computers are unprecedented, but they've been around for well over a half century. within the last half century, we've seen what computers do. We've seen how they slowly chip away at jobs, and we'll continue to see chipping away at jobs over the next half century. But there's no sudden thing that's happened in the last 10 years to make a change over what we've seen from computers. We see computers.
But isn't it possible, Robin, that computers can get so smart that all but a very small number of workers can actually provide any significant value added compared to the machine?
Yes, that's possible. And in fact, I think, yes, that will happen, but not soon, not in the next 10 or 20 or even 30 years.
What about the idea that machines themselves will make people smarter so that there will be more people in the kind of the very smart part of the spectrum, and they can be doing jobs that machines can't do? In other words, machines will help people stay ahead of machines.
Well, that's absolutely true for a certain segment of the population, people who are very well educated, have the skills, have the motivation.
But can't machines help other people in the population become smarter?
Well,
or are people sort of inherently smart or not?
You know, it's this contrast between doing work that's relatively routine and work that's genuinely creative. You know, a computer, what we've seen historically, and this is part of where I think I disagree with Robin, is that since the beginning of the computer revolutions, computers have been tools that have extended the capability of people doing routine work. But now we're getting to a point where computers are going to do the routine work. They're going to simply automate it all. And if, in fact, it's true that most of the work out there is on some level of routine, then we're going to see an impact.
You know, Robin, I think there's one thing that you won't deny, which is that over the last 20 or 30 years, the income earning potential of somebody who is well educated, let's say who has a college degree, has increased vastly in comparison to someone who's not well educated.
I agree.
So do you think that's the result at all of this kind of automation?
Not
that Martin's talking about?
So yeah. First, not mostly. First of all, if you look worldwide, we see returns to skills across the letter. I think there's particular things happening in the United States over the last few decades, and they're interesting and important, but don't confuse those with these broad trends of computers and automation. There's this fundamental, important long-term trend that it's real important to realize something big will happen within the next century. So I completely agree with Martin that something really big and out of trend will happen eventually, and we should be thinking about and preparing it. But that's not what we're seeing in the last couple of decades in the United States.
So that's not because, for example, you know, 30 years ago, you drive into a gas station, and, you know, two or three guys jump out and pump the gas and wipe off the windshield. And now you can just go to a gas station. Did the other night. There's
right.
Nobody in the gas station but me.
So let's think about
so,
that.
So those people lost their jobs,
right.
and let's say they can't be retrained for something at a higher level. That increases the
absolutely.
Gap.
But that sort of displacement of jobs has been going on for a very long time and will continue to go on for a very long time. So that's not really the effect. I think the right way to think about this is in terms of whether labor, humans and machines complement each other or substitute for each other. This is the old economics debate. So way back hundreds of years ago, economists were afraid that machines would substitute for people and, in fact, afraid that human wages would fall drastically with the very first machines. But that's not what happened because during that time, it seems like humans and machines complemented each other. The more valuable machines got, the more value humans got too. I think the right way to understand this is that tasks complement each other, but individuals can substitute on a task. So when machines were doing one set of tasks and we were doing another set of tasks, then when they got better at their task, that made us more valuable at doing our task right.
Okay, so what, just very frankly, what makes your argument different from the Luddite argument of the 19th century, which Robin was just expressing there?
Again, I think we've got technology now which takes on cognitive or intellectual problems. I mean, a lot of what Robin is talking about is mechanical type technologies that extended capability in manipulative way, not in intellectual ways. And if most people are doing routine work and if computers get to the point where they can take on the majority of routine tasks, then it's going to displace people in the sense that, well, there might conceivably be a job out there that's routine and or non-routine and creative in some way. It's going to be beyond the capability of that person to do it.
Right. So, you know, we may be focusing a little bit too much on jobs. I realize everybody talks about jobs, but really isn't the aim of economic policy or the aim of an economy to produce prosperity, opportunity, to give people a good life? And And, you know, we always heard machines are your friend, you know, like a robot can do stuff for you that you wouldn't, that, you know, you don't want to waste your time doing. So why isn't this overall a boon to society?
Well, I think in terms of the technology and, you know, what it can offer to us, it is. It is. I mean, I'm definitely not against technology at all.
I mean, people work, you know, fewer hours than they used to work, and yet they have a better life, most of them.
Well, some do. I mean, people in low-wage occupations work fewer hours, but then they work three jobs just to get by. I mean, we have to understand that this is impacting different groups in different ways. You know, going forward, I believe we're going to run into a problem when technology can do most of what people are capable of doing, or most of what the average people are capable of doing.
Why is that a problem?
Well, because those people under our system, they're not going to have an income. I mean, you can't survive in our economy without a job, not in the United States. We don't have the kind of social welfare.
This is where I disagree. I think that when machines are really powerful and they can do lots of things, you only need to own a few machines to be able to own a lot and survive and be prosperous and wealthy. So once machines are so good that people can't compete with them, we will have a vastly prosperous world where there's all these very productive machines, and owning some of those machines will be enough. So we need to make a smooth transition so that people start to buy capital so that they can own those machines and be productive and wealthy and then.
So you as a college professor could own a machine that could churn out your lectures or write books for you that otherwise would take you a long time to do?
I might, but I might just own stock in companies that do that, or I might own real estate, I might own other sorts of intellectual property. There's just many other things that are valuable in this new economy, in a world where machines are productive. There's lots to own that's useful.
But don't you agree with what Martin is saying, that in such a society there will be more, we may already be seeing this, more people will be left out. I mean, do you think there's a kind of moral dimension here that as we become more automated, the rich will get richer, or people will have the opportunity to get richer, and a lot of people will be left out?
We're still in an era where wealth is increasing. The world is on a tear in terms of increasing wealth. Worldwide, people have been getting dramatically richer. This has been the best decade ever in terms of decreasing poverty. Worldwide, people are getting richer. Now, eventually this will happen, but it'll happen with enough foresight that people can use their income to buy stock, to buy real estate, to buy these other things they will need to survive in this new world.
Well, this is a good point. I mean, you know, between 2000 and 2010 was the single biggest period of economic growth in global history. And I'm saying global history. A lot of it is because of China and India, but they, you know, they're partaking of the same kind of automation that you're talking about.
That's right, but we're
what's
also
the big problem, basically?
Well, the problem is the extreme inequality that we're seeing. I mean, it's inequality in income and also in
inequality
in
is reducing worldwide. That's the point. The rich aren't getting as rich as the poor are getting richer.
Well, in developed countries, though, it's the inequality is certainly increasing.
So you do think there's a difference between this phenomenon is more pronounced, obviously, in developed countries than in developing countries?
Currently, but it will certainly impact in developing countries and especially in China as well, eventually, because they're, you know, Foxconn, a manufacturing in China, recently introduced, they announced that they're going to introduce huge numbers of robots in spite of the fact that, you know, wages there are very low. So even China will be impacted by this eventually.
So actually, that's a really good example. So Foxconn, which employs 1.2 million people and had gotten into some...
Robots are coming. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard. Fighting non-violently. All right, State Department. From what I'm seeing here, the State Department has 38 top jobs unfilled. And I don't know how these people are going to, I don't know how President Donald Trump, that hurt, is going to fill these top flight jobs. I guess once he gets time into trying to fill these jobs, he's going to fill these jobs the way he filled his cabinet post, with unqualified people. And, you know, we're just going to have to see where that goes. All right, Bill O'Reilly, the top honcho at Fox News, has been paying off women to keep their mouth shut, to keep from going to court, sexual abuse. And I'm hearing that at least 11 to 14 sponsors have pulled their ads from his show. So this guy is guilty of sexual harassment. I mean, there's no doubt about it, because he settled on these things. He did it, but yet he still has his job. That's the thing. And he still has his job. So Fox News, the Fox Network, they are enablers on this. This guy has sexually harassed women in the workplace, and he still has his job. He's still getting his $1 million a minute. You know, I mean, he still has his job. And now he wants us to still look at him as pure and believe every word that comes out of his perverted mouth. You know, so, and Fox, I mean, last year they got rid of Roger Ailes. I mean, he was the one who was at basically running Fox News. They got rid of him. It looks like he weighed about 400 pounds, but they got rid of him for the same thing they're keeping this guy for, sexual harassment in the workplace, you know, and this guy's getting away with it. But the sponsors have pulled their ads, and he's still on the air. So I don't blame him. If I was sponsoring his show, I would pull my ads also, because he's an ass. This guy, Bill O'Reilly, is an ass. Sexual harassment. I mean, the guy's a millionaire. He's been on television forever. Why does he need to sexually harass anybody? Women are sexual creatures. They will, you don't have to grab them or rape them or grope them. I mean, you're rich, you're nice looking, you probably get any woman that you want. Why do you have to harass somebody? Why do you have to abuse somebody? You know, why do you have to break the law? It's crazy, but it happens all the time. And this guy should rot where he sits. There's no doubt about it. Bill O'Reilly. These advertisers are fleeing the Bill O'Reilly show. At some point, Fox News is going to have to get rid of this guy, because advertisers are losing. When you lose advertising, when you lose your sponsors, that's cutting into your bottom line. That's your bread and butter. The advertisers and sponsors are your bread and butter. When they pack up and leave, there goes your bread and butter. You know, and this is what's happening to Fox News and Bill O'Reilly. These guys, these advertising and sponsors, are up and leaving the show. At least 15 companies have pulled advertising from Fox News, the O'Reilly Factor, Bill O'Reilly, after revelations that several women have accused the host of sexual harassment. Following the explosive New York Times report that O'Reilly and Fox News had paid around $13 million in settlements addressing complaints brought on by five of the conservative host's previous female colleagues, advertisers moved to remove their commercials from the hit show. He's got a hit show, folks. From the hit show, among the first were automakers, Mercedes-Benz, and Hyundai. Wow. They kept leaving It continued Tuesday with Mitsubishi, T. Rowe Price, Wayfair, Bayer, Credit Karma, and Lexus, among those confirming to reporters that they had pulled advertising from the Bill O'Reilly show. Allegations are disturbing, they're saying, and given the importance of women in every aspect of our business, we don't feel this is a good environment in which to advertise our products right now. I don't blame them. They're right. Women are a part, are a part of every aspect of life in America. And to continue to deal with, promote the Bill O'Reilly show is a slap in their face. We don't need this. We don't feel this is a good environment to which to advertise our products right now. Mercedes-Benz spokesman first reported the company's decision to pull advertising on Monday. So the Bill O'Reilly show is in trouble, whether Fox News wants to admit it not or not. Actually, Fox News as a whole, Fox News is in trouble because they have enabled this. They have helped this guy's settle these sexual harassment. That means they are co-conspirator to all of this. Yeah. And why are they helping Bill O'Reilly? Because Bill O'Reilly is one of their superstars. His show is number one. He is a megastar. He has a hit show, and they want to keep that intact, but it is just fell apart. It is, the guy is a perverted sex offender with a job, with a license to harass. And that's not right. That's not true. That should not be what Fox News is all about. If you've been listening to Fox News, or you've been hearing things about Fox News, you've known for years and years and years that Fox News has always been controversial. Controversial. There's always something coming out of Fox News, especially during the Obama years. Fox News practically flattened Obama, you know, so with lies and more lies and then lies after that. But Fox News has never been, most people never thought of Fox News as actually being a viable news organization. They did a lot of lying. Yeah, a lot of people watch. A lot of people watched. But that doesn't, I said this before, a lot of people did watch Fox News, but a lot of people did not watch Fox News because they wanted to watch Fox News. They watched Fox News because there was such a blow up about Fox News. Some people watch Fox News just to see what it was all about. Some people watch Fox News just to, you know, because everybody else was watching it. Then there's some people who watch it because they wanted to hear lies. Some people just like to hear lies, so they would watch Fox News. They hated Obama so much, they didn't give a damn if Fox News was lying or not. They just wanted to hear something negative about Obama. And they did. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We got about 6 more minutes left into the show, folks. Yeah, I'm a little bit under the weather, but I think I can do this. All righty. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on, can't even think of where I'm to be followed. Facebook, Twitter, Google, I'm all over the place. Instagram. I guess you have to be all over the place if you are an author, a writer, radio host, book reviewer, a family guy, husband. You have to be kind of all out there, I guess, right? Unless you're just the kind who wants privacy. And I talked about privacy yesterday. Donald Trump signed a, you probably know this better than I do. Donald Trump signed an executive order ending all privacy. So you and I have no privacy. The businesses can track our browsing as much as they want to and sell our information as much as they want to, thanks to Donald Trump. You know, thanks to Donald Trump. I told you yesterday, Donald Trump doesn't give a damn about you, me, and the people of the United States. He cares about what he wants and what he only wants. He cares about what he can get the Republicans in Congress to do, even if their constituency, their voters, disagree. Donald Trump does not give a damn about you, me, or anybody else. I mean, if you or I are criticizing Donald Trump is saying F off. That's what he's saying. F off. I'm the president of the United States. You're not. I've been voted. They voted me in. Not you. Not you. So this is Donald Trump. He doesn't represent every aspect of America. He represents the people who. He represents the people who like him. That's who he represents. If you don't like him, you don't care nothing about him. He's saying F you. He doesn't like you. He's going to go over to those few people who say no matter what he does or says, they're going to support him, no matter how rotten it is. So, you know, there you have it, folks. All right. Yeah, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening, folks. We're just about off the air. It's been fun. I struggled through this. Thank you very much. And we'll see you tomorrow. If we can get this started. We will see you tomorrow after this, folks. Here we go.
So you Democrats, you've been in that.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns.
Out there for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you join me tomorrow. We're going to have another great guest on the show. I'm booked up. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care.